Have you ever been asked to write an inventory of your behaviors? This is a common part of working a 12-step program and very helpful in recovery. We'll cover one kind of inventory today in this episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. This is Recovery Support, and I'm Kevin Bergen, licensed psychotherapist. This show is to support those in recovery from sexually compulsive behavior and to offer that support with education, inspiration, and motivation. Writing your inventory. This is most commonly thought of as part of step 4 in the 12 steps. And we'll talk about that more next week in part 2 of our discussion on inventories. Right now, during our reading of the problem from the SA White Book, listen today for ways your problem includes keeping things locked away inside of you where you can't look at them. The problem, page 203 from the SA White Book. Many of us felt inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. Our insides never matched what we saw on the outsides of others. Early on, we came to feel disconnected from parents, from peers, from ourselves. We tuned out with fantasy and masturbation. We plugged in by drinking in the pictures, the images, and pursuing the objects of our fantasies. We lusted and wanted to be lusted after. We became true addicts. Sex with self, promiscuity, adultery, dependency relationships, and more fantasy. We got it through the eyes. We bought it. We sold it. We traded it. We gave it away. We were addicted to the intrigue, the tease, the forbidden. The only way we knew to be free of it was to do it. "Please connect with me and make me whole," we cried with outstretched arms. Lusting after the big fix, we gave away our power to others. This produced guilt, self-hatred, remorse, emptiness, and pain, and we were driven ever inward, away from reality, away from love, lost inside ourselves. Our habit made true intimacy impossible. We could never know real union with another because we were addicted to the unreal. We went for the chemistry, the connection that had the magic, because it bypassed intimacy and true union. Fantasy corrupted the real. Lust killed love. First addicts, then love cripples. We took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves. Conning ourselves time and again that the next one would save us, we were really losing our lives. Some sponsors have their sponsees write a preliminary inventory as part of step 1. Just writing something down is hugely therapeutic for many people. I often teach my clients how to journal and journal about their thoughts, their emotions, because it tends to free one of continuous invasive thoughts that seem to rattle around in one's head. By writing it down, you get the relief of some burdensome thoughts that won't rest, because now they're on paper. They're stationary. They're not going around anymore in your head or morphing into other thoughts. We're going to read today about step 1 inventories from the first volume of the essay publication, Step Into Action. This is about step 1 and suggest ways some sponsors will guide you through step 1. Beginning on page 49 of the first Step Into Action book, preparing a written step 1 inventory. When we arrived at Sexaholics Anonymous, we were told to go to as many meetings as possible, to get phone numbers and start using them daily, to begin daily readings of the literature, to get a sponsor, even if only a temporary sponsor, and to start working the steps. We needed a sponsor because deceit and lying had become so much a part of us that we believed our own lies. Because of our denial, we continued our sexaholic thinking and behaviors. A sponsor helped shed light on our true condition. We were also told that we needed to write out our first step with the help of our sponsor. The purpose of a written step 1 inventory was to come to know within ourselves that we were really sexaholics that we were powerless over lust and that our lives would remain unmanageable by us alone. This step often brings up uncomfortable feelings as we see the written truth before us. Some of us have spent afternoons at our sponsors' homes writing this list. Just having someone close by can provide a sense of safety from lust that allows us to face the pain, fear, and shame. Others have written inventories at workshops where a group of recovering persons have met and supported each other as we wrote about some really painful experiences. These gatherings allowed us to do together what we could not do alone. Our sponsors told us not to be surprised if some of this work aroused or triggered our lust, since lust may have been our reaction to almost any strong emotion or situation. When this happened, we immediately made a phone call to another member for fellowship. Once we wrote our step one inventory, we met with our sponsor to review it. Our sponsor pointed out any items we included for shock value or victimization, rather than seeing our powerlessness and unmanageability. Our sponsor helped us word the examples in a way that told the truth, without embellishment or drama, and that respected the feelings of the group members who would hear us present our step one inventory. We avoided specific details that might create triggers or legal problems for ourselves or for the members of the group. Describing explicit, graphic images during the presentation of a step one inventory at a first step meeting is not appropriate. While giving away powerful images is sometimes needed in order to dispel their power, this is better done in private with a sponsor or other experienced SA member. In consideration of other group members, we don't use offensive language. The idea of sharing the shameful secrets we had written did not appeal to many of us, and yet our sponsor asked us to present our step one inventory to our group. We called this giving away our first step. This idea was scary. In the families and neighborhoods that some of us grew up in, revealing a weakness was like bleeding in front of a school of sharks. Some of us were also afraid that after we shared the violent, abusive, or shameful nature of our acting out, other members would react negatively with anger or even disgust. Maybe we would be asked to leave. However, the response of the group was always otherwise. Instead of condemnation, we received love and support. In this fellowship, we speak of leading with our weakness. This step one process is about admitting our powerlessness. Understanding and accepting our powerlessness is our way to freedom. In writing our step one inventory, we were not composing. We let go of all concerns with how good our writing looked or sounded. We scribbled down the truth as it came to us. Do not dwell on whose fault it is. The facts of your life are just that, facts. It is not the purpose of this step to judge where you, your parents, or anyone else has been right or wrong. The purpose is to admit to yourself honestly that you are powerless and that your life is unmanageable by your thinking alone. The following questions are just a few examples. Most of us can easily come up with more with the prompting of our sponsor. We started to look at our sexual history. We thought about our behavior, how we felt about it then, how we feel about it now. We answered questions like these. What is my earliest recollection of sex? Was there anything compulsive or deviant about it? Did I have any unusual pre-puberty experiences with sexual behavior? When did I discover masturbation? Did it become compulsive and frequent? What about visualization and romantic or sexual fantasy? Have these occupied a lot of my time? Do I dress to attract attention? Have I felt I had to have a relationship in order to feel okay about myself? Did I engage in serial or overlapping relationships or affairs? Did I use a sexual or romantic high to mask feelings? That question there is related to the podcast from last week about feelings. Continuing on here, was the anticipation or the pursuit more important than the relationship? Did acting out ever really take away my craving for more? Have I harmed myself or others physically, emotionally, or spiritually? Have I experienced remorse, guilt, shame, or depression because of my fantasies or behavior? Did my behavior conflict with my religious teachings or beliefs? What finally brought me to SA? What were the final incidents? Next, think about powerlessness. Ask yourself questions like these. Were there times when I've been so consumed with lust that I was no longer aware of the world around me or able to think about the choices I was making? Did I go to absurd lengths to be with my pornography, my romantic novel, or my current relationship? Did I masturbate while driving? Did I act out sexually in public? Did I have sex with persons who meant nothing to me or with persons I didn't like? Did I objectify people? Did I notice only the attractive people in my environment? What have I done that I didn't want to do? With whom have I associated that I wouldn't have otherwise? Where have I gone that I otherwise never would have gone? Is lust running my life? Did I do things that my better nature told me I shouldn't be doing? Did I put myself in dangerous situations? Did I dress, flirt, or manipulate others in order to be lusted after? Were there particular neighborhoods I could not drive through without acting out? Did I go to particular neighborhoods or places in order to stalk or spy on someone? Did I find myself looking in windows? Did I do things that disgusted or overwhelmed me with shame? Did I cross boundaries of behavior that I had set for myself? Was it impossible for me to say no? What promises did I make to myself or to others? Did I keep them? How many times have I tried unsuccessfully to quit? What happened when I failed? List examples of the unmanageability in your life now, that is, the consequences of your addiction. Sometimes you can identify a direct consequence of an episode on the powerless list and place it on the unmanageability list. Examples of questions to guide your reflections are these. How much time have I spent in sexual obsession? How has time spent on the addiction affected other areas of my life? How has my illness affected my home life, my spouse, or lack of a spouse, my children, or lack of children? What other relationships have been damaged by my acting out or obsession? What friendships have I lost? Did lust interfere with the precious relationship, whether or not that person was the object of lust? How has my illness affected my education or other areas of personal or skill development? How has my illness affected my work, my career, or a promotion? Could I have been fired if discovered? Was I fired? How has my illness affected my finances? Have I lost income or incurred significant costs? Have I remained trapped in an underpaid position? Did I miss important events so I could act out? Did I create events, trips, or situations so I could act out? How has my illness affected my reputation, my social standing? Have I or loved ones received negative publicity or been under public scrutiny because of my acting out? Has it affected me legally? Have I or my partner had an unplanned pregnancy? Have I paid for or had an abortion to cover up my acting out? Have I contracted or passed on a sexually transmitted disease? Have I been arrested? Could I have been arrested for what I've done? Could I have been sued? If we had thought that we could recover without the support of the group, some of us would have refused, or at least delayed, giving away our first step. However, our fear of returning to our addiction was greater than our fear of how the group might react. The support and acceptance we received as we shared our first step broke through much of the fear and shame we were carrying. We began to see that we were no longer alone, that we had found a group of people who understood our problem and welcomed us. A measure of relief from shame, fear, and isolation was one of the benefits of the first step. Another was that if we were thorough in this effort, we had written evidence of the nature and severity of our condition. We began to see the truth about ourselves and our addiction. That concludes our reading today. We're going to close now with the solution on page 204 of the SA White Book. Now, as we open the podcast, I want to focus a little differently on the solution like we did on the problem. Let's read it today in the context of facing your stuff and listing it out. How has this solved things for you? Page 204, the solution. We saw that our problem was threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Healing had to come about in all three. The crucial change in attitude began when we admitted we were powerless, that our habit had us whipped. We came to meetings and withdrew from our habit. For some, this meant no sex with themselves or others, including not getting into relationships. For others, it also meant drying out and not having sex with the spouse for a time to recover from lust. We discovered that we could stop, that not feeding the hunger didn't kill us, that sex was indeed optional. There was hope for freedom, and we began to feel alive. Encouraged to continue, we turned more and more away from our isolating obsession with sex and self, and turned to God and others. All this was scary. We couldn't see the path ahead, except that others had gone that way before. Each new step of surrender felt it would be off the edge into oblivion, but we took it. And instead of killing us, surrender was killing the obsession. We had stepped into the light, into a whole new way of life. The fellowship gave us monitoring and support to keep us from being overwhelmed, a safe haven where we could finally face ourselves. Instead of covering our feelings with compulsive sex, we began exposing the roots of our spiritual emptiness and hunger, and the healing began. As we faced our defects, we became willing to change. Surrendering them broke the power they had over us. We began to be more comfortable with ourselves and others for the first time without our drug. Forgiving all who had injured us and without injuring others, we tried to right our own wrongs. At each amends, more of the dreadful load of guilt dropped from our shoulders until we could lift our heads, look the world in the eye, and stand free. We began practicing a positive sobriety, taking the actions of love to improve our relationships with others. We were learning how to give, and the measure we gave was the measure we got back. We were finding that none of the substitutes had ever supplied. We were making the real connection. We were home. Join with me in the third step prayer, page 95 of the SA White Book, or 63 of Alcoholics Anonymous, or by Googling third step prayer. God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Please email me with questions, with feedback, and even commentary at kbrecoverysupport@gmail.com. And remember that the Recovery Support Podcast does not promote any program or fellowship and only informs about resources that I have found helpful to my clients. You can refer to the show notes at recoverysupport.podbean.com. Have a terrific week and have a sober day.